This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. In the week when the current Barnsley head coach, Pyrrhus Baggy, celebrated his first league win since taking over in the final week of November. And as a result, he doubled his point tally over his 12 games in charge. Our first guest this week also joined his new club around the same time, but he's got designs on the top rather than moving away from the bottom of the Sky Bet Championship.
I'm really just excited about bringing the good times back to Preston North End, getting the fans together, galvanising everyone and having this real togetherness of us pushing up the league as quick as we possibly can.
In Sky Bet League One, a Football League legend drops by.
I played football because I wanted to win, because I wanted to be successful, because I wanted to achieve things.
And in Sky Bet League Two, a promotion chasing captain talks dramatic finishes, winning runs and domestic chores.
I thought, I don't want to put my back out putting the washing machine in the car. How am I going to explain that one to the manager?
It's the official EFL podcast. When we invited our next guest onto the official EFL podcast at the start of November, we did flag that Alou was fast making a name for himself in the Southwest with Plymouth Argyle. His long career in football until that point hadn't taken him further south than Milton Keynes. Within a month, Ryan Lowe was back in the Northwest after taking over at Preston North End. Where does that decision rank in the ones you've had to make over the course of your career, Ryan?
Probably the toughest. Not a lot of people think it was, but it was. But in the same sense, it was the easiest as well. Just because it was tough what we were building down there, the great, you know, bond with the board of directors, great bond with the fans, and you know, and the players first and foremost, were recruited well to try and have a playoff push, which they continue to do, which is fair play. But then ultimately, Clem, you know, everyone wants a manager in the Championship. Did I think I could get Plymouth the Championship this year? There was every chance. Did I think I'd get an opportunity in the Championship like within the next year or two? You'd always feel you can, but you only have to look now. Managers who lose 3, 4, 5, 6 games on the bounce, and some people are out of a job. So the decision to take the Preston job was relatively, because it was Preston and it was easy, but the decision to leave Plymouth Argyle, which what we were building, was a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, did you do kind of any weighing up of your own progression? Because it's a bit of a graveyard, isn't it? You must have seen a lot of people before you, young managers, have success at a lower league club, and then they take the leap to a bigger club and it doesn't quite work out. So there must have been certain parameters you needed to be satisfied that you'd have a fair chance of success in your new home.
Yeah, I did. I did think about it long and hard, because they always say pick your own and not your football club. And oh, sadly, we lost our owner in Trevor Emmings, who'd been a Preston diehard for many, many years. His son now, Craig's, took over the family. And obviously, Peter Ridsdale, who's a fantastic bloke, who runs all the football departments. And, you know, but I'd had opportunities to leave Plymouth Argyle before the Preston job, to be honest with you, Clem, when I was early in my 6 months, 8 months there. And I chose not to do it. I chose to stay and build. And, you know, there was one approach from a club, and then there was opportunities that would arise. And I was linked with a lot of clubs. I'd never obviously spoke to them, but you know, my name was around there. And if I would have said yes, I'll speak, then the opportunity would have arose. But I never, I felt I needed that time to try and get Plymouth where I felt he belonged, and that was in the top half of League One. So I'd done my time, I'd stayed and committed, but you know, it was 2.5 years down there without the family, and you know, when this one come along, it was, as I say, it was tough to leave Plymouth Argyle, because I met so many friends down there and what we were building. And fair play to Shuey now, he's continuing that on, and I wish them all the best and all the luck in the world. I look out for the results every Saturday. But ultimately, it was an opportunity for me to get to the Championship with another fantastic football club in Preston North End.
Do you think that, generally speaking, we underestimate just how many managers are crisscrossing the country in the name of work? I mean, it's a tough old slog, isn't it? You know, what you know is in a completely different geographical area, and you had about as extreme a version of it as you could have.
I've never really been to Plymouth or the South West. You know, a lot of people here, I know, used to go Cornwall and all these. I'd never ventured down that far, to be honest. And you know, when I got there, the place, the city was fantastic to me. The people around there were fantastic. I made it a home. Was it lonely at times? Yeah, of course it was. You know, was I, you know, felt as if I was without my family, which I was, yeah. that I have to entertain myself and go on bike rides. And of course, you know, you've got to do these things. But I was ingrained in the job to get them where I got them. And I think everyone knows, you know, in football, in management, there's only two ways you leave a football club. And once someone comes and takes you, or one, you've been sacked. So either way, you're leaving on bad terms. I just hope in the future that, you know, especially the diehard fans and the real ones really understand the situation. I'm sure they do. Still got a lot of friends down there, still in contact with them. But ultimately, when an opportunity arises like that, and when you are 300 miles away from your family, it's one you've got to definitely consider.
And was the split with your great mate, Stephen Schumacher, as you mentioned his name, was that inevitable at some point, because you always knew he had ambitions in his own right?
Yeah, definitely. Look, Shuey become a fantastic coach, and you know, we'd work every hour God sends to try and get the football club where we wanted to get it to. You know, he was a young coach coming out. I brought him into Bury with me when he was working at Everton under 11s and playing part time. And you know, I showed him the ropes, showed him what we want to do, how we want to do it. We both had the same philosophy and the same style, and we continued and learned right the way through. You know, he's just finishing his pro license now. I finished mine last year. You know, we wanted to go on a journey together, but ultimately when an opportunity comes for Shuey, he's always wanted to be a manager. I was never going to stand in his way to do that. You know, I'd have loved him to come on a journey with me forever in a day and stay with me, but he obviously chose to go on his own journey, and it's a fantastic club for him to start that journey with good people around. So, you know, it was a no-brainer for him. Was the disappointment at my behalf? Yeah, of course, because it was like, you know, I've lost me best mate. He's by side every day of the week for the last 3.5 years, and then all of a sudden he's gone and we only speak on the phone or FaceTime. So, but look, I'm really pleased for him. He's continuing what we started to set out to do, and eventually he was definitely going to go and do what he wanted to do, and he's really starting that, and he started well with it.
Is it a big difference between the lower two divisions of the EFL and the Championship in terms of profile, in terms of quality of players, etc.?
I think that is. I still think there's some fantastic players in League One and, you know, League Two that eventually jump up. But in terms of the players we had at Plymouth Argyle, was some fantastic quality. But then I come into a Preston North End team, and you know, I go in the rondos with the lads every Friday or every couple of days whenever we're doing them. That was wherever it was, Bury, Plymouth, now Preston. I give you an insight into it. I don't go in them no more because I can't ever get out of them when I give the ball away. So the quality of level.
Sorry, that you go in the what? Sorry, what did you say they were?
Do you know the rondos? The little, we call them boxes. The rondos. So they have two in the middle.
Oh, with you, yeah. Outside. I try very hard, Louis. You just went a tad technical for me for a second.
Sorry. And I normally go in them all the time. And my first couple of days in there, Mike Myers said, right, one touch in the boxes. I'm like, oh, yeah, fine. So goes in, and I couldn't get out. So I don't bother going in them anymore because the quality has risen. Obviously, you know, there is some fantastic players. We've got some fantastic lads. But as you always say, there's loads of room for improvement. We feel we've improved the lads who we've got at Preston North End already. We're coaching them into the style and a brand I want. But ultimately, as for the league, Clem, you know, you've done things in the Championship and League One, League Two. It's relentless, mate. And you have to make sure your game plans are spot on every single week. And luckily enough for us, it's been going that way.
Have you had any sort of act as if moments? Have you had any sort of nervy moments? You know, when you go and stand before a group of new players, many of whom you won't know for the first time, they're assessing you just like you're assessing them. Do you have to really hold it together and hit the ground running?
Yeah, you do. I think, well, you know me by now for many years. I think I'm just a black and white guy. I go right down the middle. I'm never, there's no grey areas. And
apart from on the top of your head, mate, obviously. But then I'm not in a position to start talking about hair, am I?
But no, fair enough. Good one. But in terms of it, I think the lads like that. I've always felt I've had some good feedback from it. And, you know, I think I always say to the group, when I stop speaking to you, then that's the day I'm done with it, done with you. You know, I'm there to help you. It's not about me as the manager. It's about us collectively. And, you know, they've took on board excellent. There hasn't been many, many rollickings, I must say, with them, because they've been good as gold, all the lads. And they're all chomping at the bit to play for the team and the football club, and I want that to continue. I want that to have that real fight and desire and commitment to get in the team, and they've certainly been shown us that. So from day one, I set my stall out of what I wanted. I presented to them how we're going to play, what we're going to do, and I said, look, if I can do that with League One players, I feel I should be able to do it with Championship players, with all due respect to the lads we've had. And that's what's been the case, Clem. I think, you know, they've all took on board, they've bought into what I'm trying to do. And long may that continue.
And because you will pick up a variety of different personalities, do you get the odd instant where you may be standing there in front of the group, but then you're looking at one in the corner and you're thinking, I'm not sure he's having me yet. And you know you have to put the afterburners on and just win them over to your way of thinking?
I think I must say that I think they've all bought into it and the way I'm thinking. You know, it's crazy, isn't it, as a manager, because you always get that. What's he smiling at? What's he laughing at? You get a little bit, oh, can't be too. Danny Mayer was forever smiling at me every time I'd done a team talk at Plymouth Argyle. And I said, what are you smiling at? It'd take me off track of what I was talking about. But that was just him in his ways, you know. And again, you know, there's some fantastic lads. They've all got different characters and they all are different characters. But I must say, they've been a credit to work with on a daily basis. So I think as long as you don't talk absolute rubbish to them, And you're telling them what they see and what's there, and everything's visual. We're not doing it and trying to kid anyone. You buy into it. If you're trying to kid someone, they catch it out, they find you out. And that's certainly what we don't do, and I don't do as a manager, and my staff certainly don't do. We give them everything we possibly can. But I must say that you've got to be on the money with them 24/7, because they're a clever group, they're good footballers. And if you give them something that's misleading, they'll know.
You made a very bold statement earlier in the season down at your former club. You said, we are on course to becoming a sustainable championship club. What, have you got a similar sort of statement about Preston North End? Where are you? Where is that football club?
Well, I want it to be in every time you go to a new football club, you want the football club to be outreached and try and get somewhere where it's never been before. And Preston North End's never been the top flight. So what my aim is to do is to
build. Well, it's never been in the Premier League. I mean, obviously, going way back, it was in the top flight.
Yeah, I mean, look, the top flight's the Premier League now, isn't it, in my era?
Yeah, but they haven't actually been in the top flight, believe it or not, since the season before I was born. So that is a very, very, very long time.
Well, that's a long time, Clem, isn't it? And again, I think, you know, when we went down to Plymouth and we had this strategy of being a sustainable championship club, I want to sit down with Peter Craig and the board we've got and the family and say, right, where do we want to get to? Ultimately, my aim is to collect as many points as we possibly can from now until the end of the season. But once we get to that, there will be conversations of where we want to try and take Preston North End, because I think they should be. You know, it was a fantastic, bold statement from not just myself, but Simon Allett and everyone at Plymouth Argyle when it took over. And that was a bit of pressure, because let's get to the championship in 5 years. He assured us there was no real pressure on me, but that was the plan, that was the strategy, that was the structure we were trying to get to. And it was a fantastic plan, and I've said it, he will get there, and hopefully, you know, if they continue the form they're doing now and the shoey, they can keep climbing the table. And I want them to do that, because I want them to finish what I started and shoey to continue it, especially with the owner and the board of directors are all good people. But I need now Preston North End to follow suit, and we need to put a plan of action together of what we want to do. So me and Peter speak on a daily basis, Peter Ridsdale. He's got big plans, obviously, for the football club. I know Craig Hemmings now, the son of Trevor, who's now absolutely over the moon with the football getting played, and we're sending them home happy, and the games are winning. And that's my job, to make sure that they stay happy, and hopefully we can build something for the future together somewhere where, as you've said, in your lifetime, we've never really been. And the fans are excited. Why not? Why not plan? Why not dream? I think if you've got a structure and a plan in place, I think there's always a plan to be achieved.
Do you get a sense of history at the place? I mean, obviously, first of all, the only club to have played in every single EFL season is one hell of an achievement for starters, let alone to think back to some of the highs, to go back over a century to the Invincibles. Do you get a real sense of legacy and of being part of a long chain?
Yeah, I do. You know, you see the Tom Finney statue and stuff. And you know, for me, you know, the Bill Shankly stand. And I just wish our fans were in that and not the away fans. But, you know, Bill Shankly's obviously, in terms of what he'd done for Liverpool. And, you know, but what I've got to try and do for Preston North End is I've got to try and I said it all the time. Every time I've gone to a club or I've took over, I want to bring the good times back. And that's a bit of me. We brought the good times back to Bury when they were down and out. We got them to a place where we felt could kick on, and unfortunately never. Plymouth Argyle had just been relegated from League One, and we brought the good times back there. I think it was averaging 6,000 or 7,000 a week. They're averaging now 14,000 a week, which is fantastic, and fair play to them for the support. And Preston North End's no different. I think, you know, we were averaging between 8 and 10s. You know, now we're getting 2,000 travelling away fans and 1,500, 1,000 travelling on the way. And you know, we need to try and fill Deepdale as quick as we can now. I know there's a deal for the weekend for them to come and support us against Reading. You know, we've got two derbies to look forward to. So I'm really just excited about bringing the good times back to Preston North End, getting the fans together, galvanising everyone, and having this real togetherness of us pushing up the league as quick as we possibly can.
Listen, in the aftermath of the game at the weekend when you won at Peterborough, there's a very vivid pictures of you I can see in my head now of you doing the old punching the sort of air thing in front of the supporters. Does that in any way replicate the feeling you used to get when you put the ball in the back of the net?
No, it doesn't, to be fair. It's better. It's better.
It's better?
It's better, yeah. When I used to put the ball in the back of the net, it was a moment of, you know, I felt happiness and joy. And but as a manager, you know, I'm managing not just me, but my staff as well. You're managing 25 players. You're leaving two or three players out the squad, and you have to tell them that they're going to be out the squad and sit in the stands. And then when you put the game plan together, you know, when you're waiting for them 11, 12, 13, 14 players coming on the pitch to perform that game plan, and when they do it, it's a sigh of relief, and it's the passion in me that I love. And I want to bring that I've brought it to Preston North End. Everywhere I've done it at Plymouth Argyle, and I feel there's nothing better when you've won a game of football and you can liaise with the fans and your players to do a fist pump like that. It's a relief and a real excitement about it and a real buzz.
When I look at the Skybet Championship table from Coventry, currently as we record this in 12th, up to Blackburn in 3rd, there are just 10 points between that cluster of 10 clubs. Does that make you think you've got as good a chance of anybody of squeezing into one of those playoff places?
Do you know what, Clem? A lot of people have been asking this now over the past few weeks because of the results. I think, you know, we've lost 1 in 10 and the form table says we're about 7th and, you know, we're 20 points out of a possible, whatever it was. But people will get carried away and be excited about it, and I want them to be. We just have to look at the next game. You've just said it there. There's some fantastic teams in the division. Anyone could beat anyone. Where people are, you know, we played Huddersfield last week and we done okay against them. I thought we were the winner. We possibly should have had a penalty. And they're 5th. So we have to look at the benchmark these teams are setting. But we can't get too carried away. The league's relentless. There's some good clubs, as I've said. And what we've got to do is look at the next one. And if we continue to get back-to-back wins and pick up results along the way and on the road, and we're 8 or 9, 10 games to go, if we feel there's a chance that we can push in there, then we'd be foolish not to have a good go, wouldn't we? So that'll certainly be the aim. But it's going to be tough to do that. But it's one we won't lack in trying.
Great to talk to you, mate.
Cheers, Clem.
Your Skybet Championship fixtures this coming weekend, Friday night. What a match. Bournemouth currently in 2nd at home to Nottingham Forest, who are just outside the playoff places in 7th. Early kickoff on Saturday features Fulham against Huddersfield, unbeaten in the last 12. Can Alexander Mitrovic get the goal that will take him to 32 for the season and break the Championship goal-scoring record, nicking it from Ivan Toney, who set it last season? Talking of prolific strikers, Blackburn are at home to Millwall. Ben Brereton-Diaz has knocked in 20 for Blackburn, but a lot of fans will be agonisingly looking at the team sheet for that one. Has he recovered from his foot injury? Elsewhere, Middlesbrough, currently 6th, travel to Bristol City. There's a real old relegation skirmish, Derby County against Peterborough. Preston, well, the next game that Ryan Lowe just spoke of, just 4 points off the playoffs are Preston. They are at home to Reading. And QPR have lost their last 2. Entertain Hull City have lost their last 3. Should mention as well, actually, pretty full schedule right across the EFL in the forthcoming midweek.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Into Skybet League One, and he may have hung up his boots last year after 17 seasons, over 600 league appearances and 3 promotions, 3 relegations with Doncaster Rovers. But as mentor and head of player development at the club, and now as a published author of Ahead of the Game, A Professional Mindset, released since he last dropped by, James Coppinger will always be welcome on the official EFL podcast. What kind of reaction have you had to the book, James?
Yeah, a really positive one. It's quite a daunting thing, I think, sort of writing a book and putting it out there. But yeah, I was really pleased with the reaction, and it's gone down really well.
I mean, I'm not saying I was eavesdropping when you and producer Dave were getting the technicals ready for this particular podcast, but has the book helped your own transition? Because you are obviously in a very strange land at the moment, are you not, personally?
Yeah, I think I've been planning for this, I'd probably say since I turned 30, so for 10 years. I've been working on sort of mentoring, on mentality, mental performance for the last 5-6 years, working with individual players right across the country. So it's definitely something that I was ready for. And the book obviously coming out is more around sort of the target audience would be parents, would be sort of 15, 16 to 18 year old aspiring footballers, you know, that want to know more about what it takes, not just technically and physically, but mentally as well.
Yeah, but I wondered whether it gave you a little diversion from the adjustment you are doing from physically playing to actually having this different role at the club. The fact that you had the book launch to focus on and helping others.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, again, but while I was playing, I was still doing things. I was still doing other things. Probably took me 2 years to write the book. I got a ghostwriter to do that. I think I mentioned that last time. And, you know, I built my own house, a project managed my own build 5-6 years ago. I've been on courses to buy businesses, to learn
well,
about
well,
business.
Hold on a second. We haven't had mention of the self-built home at this stage. Has it got a moat, turrets, crocodiles swimming around, et cetera, et cetera?
It's up on the hills in Gisborough. Or it was, I've sold it now. So, I knocked down an old barn, an old farmhouse, and rebuilt it from scratch. So really enjoyed that process. I've always been into sort of property and doing up things, and I had a few buy-to-lets and did them up from scratch, renovations. So me and my wife decided we wanted to build a house. We bought a caravan. We lived in a caravan. Ironically, when I scored that goal against Brentford on the last day of the season, my whole family were in the
caravan.
Hold
on a sec, please. I don't know. Where do we get to? I reckon that's about 3.5 minutes in. Well done. Go on.
Yeah, they were all in the caravan, so they were all watching the scores come in the caravan, and I think the caravan nearly turned on its side when I put that ball in the back of the net. So yeah, we lived up there. We lived up there with two kids, two dogs on site, and managed to build a house, which again was a fantastic experience, but you know, not the typical thing that a footballer would do.
Yeah. Quite. So you are, what, finding new avenues slowly but surely to get involved with? Because obviously your new role with Doncaster takes you 3 days a week, but you're sort of starting to explore new ideas and new projects?
Yeah, you know, I'm really enjoying the time. You know, I think I said it last time as well, where I can just relax a little bit in the mind, and you know, I don't have to be sort of worrying about what I eat, what I do off the pitch, recovery wise, and yeah, looking at different things, really enjoying my role and responsibilities within the club, although there's not that definitive with the head of player development. You can almost make it my own, and a lot of it is around the mental side of the game, working with younger players and players almost in that bracket between probably 18, 19 and 21, 22, where they find themselves not in the first team, but, you know, coming out of the 18s and 19s, and it can be really difficult, that transition. So really enjoying that. And yeah, looking at other things. It's just, again, people that retire will tell you more about it. You almost lose your identity as a player, and you have to reinvent that and find something else that gives you a purpose, I think.
Yeah, I can fully relate to that, because we all at times of extreme work think life would be great if all we had to do was sit around on the sofa for 6 months in our pants. But actually the reality is, a month in, even if we completely let ourselves go, eat what we want, drink what we want, then I think we're sort of, there's a self-discipline, isn't there, that sort of drags in and goes, all right, enough. It's time to move a bit more. It's time to eat and drink a bit less.
Yeah, and I think for players, for me personally, 24 years, leaving school at 16, I've done nothing else, but I've had a structured lifestyle. I played football because I probably found this out when I retired, but because I wanted to win, because I wanted to be successful, because I wanted to achieve things. That's why I played football. And, you know, when that finishes, it's like, right, what do I do now? How can I fill that gap? You know, coaching, being on this side of the fence is quite a selfless role, because you don't get that much praise. You don't get that much, you know, if you're a manager or a coach, nobody really gives you that. It's all about the players, and rightly so. But you have to sort of get that into your head that, you know, you're doing it for the right reasons. You're trying to make a difference. And it's I imagine, not as easy as people think.
Definitely isn't. On the mentoring side, on the development and helping the younger players coming through, without spoiling any relationships and naming any names, what kind of scrapes are young players getting themselves into? What's the difference between your generation and their generation in terms of the issues that they have in their lives?
I think it's all relative. I think communication, character. You speak to managers and coaches now, and that's a huge thing. You know, that's changed. There's less characters within dressing rooms, and communication, game management are high on the agenda when it comes to things that we need to improve on. You know, you've got lads coming from under 23s teams, Premier League under 23s teams, and, you know, it's almost like missed out. It's all about technique. It's all about the technical side and the physical side. And I've had a lot of conversations around communication and what that looks like and how important it is, you know, not just vocally and verbally, but, you know, body language, and how you can help and lead your team. It's all relative, and it's very much the same as when I was growing up. But I just think that it's an everyday thing. You know, the mental side of the game is, it's not just something that you do when you're feeling down or you're having disappointment. You know, Sir Kenny Dalglish forwarded the book, and he came up with a great point that, you know, how you deal with success is just as important as how you deal with disappointment. He was part of arguably the best Liverpool and Celtic team that there ever was, and they had to churn out performance after performance, win after win, and there was a lot of pressure on them to do that. So, you know, mentally you have to be able to cope with that, and if you can't, then you're not going to be involved.
Yeah. There is an adjustment as well for more senior players too, isn't there? Because I was given an example recently of an EFL team with a couple of wily veterans in it who speak to each other in an old school style, but have been asked by the management team to change their language and the brutality of their words when it comes to younger players, because the older ones head to head can cope with it and are used to it, but you can't speak in the same way to the younger players because they've just not been groomed in the style to be able to take that.
Yeah, I think that's something that's changed probably in the last 5 or 10 years. You know, young players are conditioned probably because of the coaching. You know, coaches have changed. The old-fashioned style coach and manager has changed. So players, younger players now are more inclined to react positively to coaches that show them or give them confidence and put their arm around them and make them feel special and wanted, rather than somebody who's going to sort of grill them and sort of beat them with a stick, if you like. So I think it's so important that, like you say, older players understand that and, you know, don't see that as a weakness, because I think even more so nowadays, it's about trying to find that balance between how you communicate to younger players and the group. The captain's responsibility and senior players' responsibility is massive. You know, we've at Doncaster, we've probably got 2 or 3 senior players. So when you've only got a limited amount of senior players, it's so hard to affect that younger group. Again, going back to the successful times I had, we had sort of quite a lot of senior players, and it makes such a difference.
Now, I know you can take a tough question, so here it comes. What on earth has happened at Doncaster Rovers over the last year? Because last February, second a really good run. I think, if my memory serves me right, ended with 5 consecutive wins. And since then, it's been proper tumble off a cliff, hasn't it? Back end of last season, Darren Moore obviously moved as part of that. And then, obviously, a not particularly successful season this time around.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a lot of things, if I'm being honest. You know, COVID, financially, the club took a hit like everybody else and had to make cuts, not just in the playing department, but all over the club, staff-wise. A lot of good staff left. And, you know, it coincided with, like you just said there, a lot of senior players leaving. Myself, after being there 17 years, sort of, I'm not saying undervalued, but you know, when you're part of the furniture, you can almost get people just take you for granted. Andy Butler was the same. He's left as well. We had one player from last season start the season. So we had 10 debutants at the start of the season. And I imagine that wouldn't have happened at any club across the country. So it was a really tough one to take. We had people are isolating for 10 days prior to the first game of the season. Ben Close is one that stands out. You know, he's just signed for the club. He self-isolates for 10 days, having missing pre-season, trains one day and then has to play in the game. We had probably for the first 5 or 6 games no forwards fit. So we had sort of a right back and a left back playing right forward and left forward. So it's just, for me, in a combination of a lot of things. And, you know, clubs go through that. You know, bigger clubs than Doncaster go through that, and it's about sticking together, understanding what's happening, understanding that it's happening and that's all right. It's what you do next. It's what you do, you know, day to day that makes the biggest difference for me.
Yeah. How do you keep going as a player when you find yourself in a situation that many would see as, I don't want to use the word hopeless lightly, but the gap's been big. The defeats have kept coming. The reality is, being honest, isn't it, that without a ginormous upturn in form, a sort of footballing miracle, that the club will be relegated. So how do you keep going in those circumstances as players?
I think as players, you look to your staff, you look to the people around you to support you as much as possible. It's not like it's all of a sudden happened. It's been like this all season. So for me, it's about, you know, we are going to experience disappointment. We are going to get beat. It's how quickly we bounce back from that. You know, we've won 3 out of the last 4 away games now, which has been a massive turn in fortune, because we hadn't won an away from home game all season up until the MK Dons game. Then we went and beat MK Dons. We beat Sunderland, and then we've just beat Lincoln last night. We have to obviously start winning home games. We've had a really difficult February in terms of fixtures, the teams that we've been playing. We're getting players back in March, Tom Anderson, John Bostock. We did really well in January in terms of bringing players in. It's just, as a player, you've got to keep believing that you can get out of it. You know, you win 2, 3, 4 games on the bounce and you soon rise up the table. And we haven't had that this season. So, you know, I'd like to think it had come at some point, and it's just about building on victories. We've got Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend, at home, full house. Can we build on the Lincoln game? And then we've got Accrington on Tuesday. Can we bounce through Lincoln, Sheffield Wednesday and Accrington? You know, it changes the whole dynamic of where we are and how we feel if that happens.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I feel for the fans a wee bit, because, as I say, this time last year, they might have been contemplating promotion back to the Championship. Now they're contemplating potential relegation to League Two. That, I mean, that is some contrast. And you know them well. You've stood in front of them for 17 years. It's there's a lot of swings of emotions in and around football, is there not?
There is. And even more so now with social media, you know, everybody becomes an expert. Everybody voices their opinions. And as a player, as a member of staff, when you're not winning, it's really, really hard to take, especially if you care. You know, the majority of people care. And I know for a fact that every single player at our club cares about where they are. And, you know, it's embarrassing when you're in and around Doncaster, you know, walking around, going to your school, dropping your kids off, wherever you're going, to the supermarket. It's embarrassing. And nobody wants to be a part of that. But, you know, I've been there myself. I've had 3 promotions with Doncaster, but I've had 3 relegations. And it's so important that you understand the bigger picture, that, you know, it's happening. It's fine. Like, don't hide away from it. Just keep going, keep trying, keep doing the same things, keep working hard, and things will finally turn. I genuinely believe that. Doncaster fans have been through it a lot. They've experienced a lot of highs in the last probably 20 years, but before that, they experienced a lot of lows. You know, they were in the conference, they got relegated out of the Football League, and it was tough. So they'll stick with the team, they'll stick with the group, and I genuinely feel like we'll be better for it.
Thanks for sharing your perspective on that. Some really interesting stuff in there. If I might, well, I've got you. Obviously, big weekend of League One fixtures coming up, and I can't see further than Friday night. Rotherham have won the last six against Wigan. We're unbeaten in 20 all competitions. Obviously, lost a couple, including in the FA Cup, but have bounced back with a couple of league wins. They are the two outstanding teams in the division?
Definitely, 100%. And it's exactly what we spoke about. You know, if you look through their squads, they're full of experience. Wigan, exactly the same as Rotherham. Rotherham have experienced it. They've got the blueprint. They know what it takes to get promoted out of this division. I think they've done it twice in the last 3 or 4 years. So that they haven't changed much. They got relegated and kept them the same sort of squad. And, you know, when you play Rotherham, you know what you're up against. They've got an identity and a way of doing things. And Wigan have done unbelievable this season in terms of bouncing back from last season. They added really well. They added experience. They added quality. And it'll be a very interesting game. I honestly don't know which way it'll go.
Yeah, quite. I mean, so we've got those two. You mentioned Sheffield Wednesday, who you guys play at the weekend. A couple of managers have said to me, all right, you know, they had won four in a row, but they lost at home to Rotherham in another Yorkshire derby last weekend. But a couple of managers said to me, don't think I'd want to face them in the playoffs.
Yeah. And again, it's the expectation level of Sheffield Wednesday. Can you match the ambition of the club, you know, as a player?
Wait a minute. Can you match the expectation of the club? Are we not saying that at Charlton? Are we not saying that at Portsmouth? Are we not saying that at Ipswich, Sunderland? I mean, there's a load of big clubs in there. There's only three prizes, isn't there?
I think we're saying that about probably three of them six. You know, I think Ipswich, I think Sheffield Wednesday, Sunderland, definitely them three. But, you know, we played Sheffield Wednesday on the second game of the season, their first home game in the atmosphere. I know a few Sheffield Wednesday fans. It's a massive, massive club. And, you know, when they're in League One, they've been in League One before. And it's a tough division to get out of. So it's not as easy as just, you know, turning up as a Sheffield Wednesday player and Sheffield Wednesday as a club and saying, you know, we're bigger than this division. We've got to turn everybody over. You have to obviously come down to the level and justify your reasons for getting promotion. And it's not as easy as it should be for them. So it'll be tough, you know, whether they get in the playoffs or not. They have to sort of start winning games from now till the end of the season.
Yeah, Sunderland at home to MK Dons of Wood, five of their last eight, currently sit in third. So that is actually fourth against third. Wickham gone off the boil a little bit, just 2 points from a last possible 12 for them. They're at home to Cheltenham this weekend.
Yeah, again, Wickham looked strong, getting relegated and keeping the same squad. You could see churning out wins. But yeah, this stage of the season, sometimes you have a little bit of a lull, depending on sort of what your squad looks like. I don't think they've got the biggest squad, but, you know, they've got players that know what it takes. So it'd be interesting to see how they do in the next coming weeks to see if they can turn it around and start to build a bit of momentum. I think it's massive, you know, this stage of the season. You know, if you can start building a little bit of momentum from now till sort of five games in, it gives you that last push to get into the playoffs or get into the automatic spots.
Yeah. You know, when you get on those big long runs, and we talk about this a lot, is there an inevitability that long term you simply can't maintain? You know, people go, oh, they've won six in a row, right? All we need to do is win 12 in a row and we'll, you know, we'll win the title. It just doesn't happen in football. You have to have a little couple of lulls over the course of the season where things don't quite go your way, unless you're truly exceptional.
Yeah, I think, like you say, with Rotherham, with clubs like that, you know, it's it's once you start that run, once you get on that run, it's sometimes it's so easy. I know that sounds daft, like being on the other end of the spectrum now, it's losing games becomes a habit as well. So it's can you do that for 6, 7, 8? And the hard part is once it does stop, it's then sort of trying to get that back, which like we're talking about Wickham, it's can you then bounce back and start another run? Because sometimes it's not that easy if you're relying on just that momentum that's carrying you, and you've just got to keep maintaining the standards every single day and not get carried away. You know, sometimes your performances aren't brilliant, but you'll get results based on, you know, how you've been doing.
Always a pleasure, mate. Will you drop by and talk to us again soon?
Definitely, 100%.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Into Sky Bet League 2, and we've spoken on the official EFL podcast before about the twists and turns in form that an EFL club can go through over the course of a season, and the latest is Exeter City, a 15-match club record unbeaten run culminated last November with a fifth consecutive win, and the club looked a great bet for, at the very least, a fourth season in the playoffs in 6 years. Then followed four defeats in six, and they were tumbling towards mid-table, but six wins in seven, including a spectacular last-kick winner against Harrogate Town in the midweek fixtures. I mean, they're now in the automatic promotion places. We can talk to the Exeter City captain, Matt Jay. Where's your head at, Matt?
Well, still last night somewhere, I think. A brilliant, brilliant win last night, and to leave it so late, it was something, you know, it doesn't happen too often, and to come back from 3-1 down to win the game was something that's not happened to me very much at all. So yeah, still my head's still at St James's Park with the 5,000 fans last night. It was a terrific night for us.
Yeah, does the jeopardy of a situation like that, the uncertainty, can that actually add something to a kind of winning sequence that you're on? It's more than just the results on paper, six wins in seven, but the style of it can give you that extra 10-15% as well.
I think so, yeah. I think last night was, you know, that was above and beyond, really. We've had a lot of 1-0s and pretty boring ones, but, you know, they're still 3 points all the same. But last night was special, and it was, I think you're probably right, it does add a little bit to us as a group, and yeah, it was one to remember, and hopefully we can really use that going forward into the last, I think we've got 16 games left, so you know, we'd be happy with 16 more of them last minute winners, but I don't think that'll happen. But we're looking to put it, you know, almost, if we could get a similar run together like you just described, that would be that would stand us in really good stead. So we're looking to do that, but you know what League Two's like. It's very, very tight, and like you just alluded to, a couple of defeats and you find yourself in the middle of the table, and a couple of wins and you could be right up there. So hopefully we're the latter, and we can keep ourselves around where we are at the moment.
If you don't mind, I'm absolutely fascinated by the sort of the bits behind the scenes and things. So when you come back off a win like that, I mean, we are catching you at sort of 10 o'clock in the morning the day afterwards. Have you struggled to sleep? Is the adrenaline still pumping around your body? Do you have to watch, a couple of episodes of your favourite series when you get back just to unwind? What's it like for you?
Yeah, myself personally, I think I am one of those people that can't go to sleep straight away. I think, like you said, the adrenaline and all the sort of all your food and your energy drinks are still kicking around in your body, so it is very difficult to come home and sort of sleep. I don't tend to go on my phone too much when I get home. I like to kind of just leave that till the morning, and you know, obviously the celebrations are really good, and it's nice to see all the fans you know, applauding you and tweeting you, Instagram, all that sort of stuff. But I kind of come home and I watch a couple of episodes of the US Office. I love coming back and just sticking that on, and that kind of, you know, relaxes me and sort of just about drifts me off. So I got to sleep around probably midnight just after last night, but it is difficult.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because one of the criticisms of players these days is that they've always got their phones in hand. They're looking for that social media approbation after a game or to see reaction. But have you had to train yourself to sort of put the phone to one side?
Yeah, it's sort of one of those things where you have to go through as a player. Certainly, I've certainly done it, where you kind of straight away you're looking on your phone, see what people are saying about you, and I think there's a time in your career that you kind of seek that. And I think I've got to the age now where I don't need it as much. I don't really, I don't crave that sort of affection from people, as long as the manager's happy and, you know, my teammates are happy and we're winning and or certainly doing well. That's all that really matters at the moment. So I think a lot's been spoken about in recent weeks. I think I saw a good podcast with Declan Rice speaking about it, and I thought he hit the nail on the head there. You've got to be very careful. You kind of got to bring yourself away from the social media thing, because you see certainly a lot of the young players that are looking for that. And if you can teach them not to have to look for that too early, it's good. So I try and leave it and not look at it too much.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because sometimes one comment from, let's be honest, one individual, and there are 7.8 billion of us in the world, can almost change your perspective on a situation if you allow it to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinions, but like I've just touched on there, the ones that really matter are your family, are your friends, and your teammates and the manager. And ultimately, that's all you're trying to do is make them proud and do your best. So. I think you said it just right there. Everyone's got an opinion, but you've got to choose to, you know, look to the ones that you trust the most, I suppose.
Yeah. Meanwhile, down to earth with a bump on your day off. Are you worried about the knock on the door? Because I gather you've got a washing machine being delivered today.
Yeah, I had an unfortunate incident where the washing machine decided to pack up. So next day delivery, it couldn't wait. So it's I think we're between, well, you know what they're like. I think they give you a 6-hour time window, so it could be anything between now and any time this evening.
Yeah, I love the juggling you'll have had to do with that. So yeah, you're there with your missus. You live,
yes,
with your missus.
That's right.
Yeah. Are you having to juggle? Are you in a unit? Well, I can't do it on Tuesday. I've got a game. Literally having to plan it out.
Absolutely. Luckily, she's still in that working from home type that a lot of us still are. So she's waiting by the door as well. But I think she's going to have to get some help carrying it in.
Yeah, I think. Well, good. I'm glad you're going to man up on that front. Am I allowed to use the phrase man up anymore? It's meant with the best possible intentions.
I know what you meant.
Matt, if I may observe, you seem in a very happy place. And I don't just mean off the back of a decent run of form on the field, but obviously you're reasonably local to where you're playing. And I don't know whether you're going to welcome the cliches of the Southwest being a football microclimate in its own right, whether you're proud of that, whether you hate the fact it comes up every time, but you do seem remarkably content.
Yeah, I think, first of all, you know, being where I am down in Devon is beautiful, first of all. I mean, we get to travel to all different places across England to play, and there's not many better places than here. So I'm very happy with where I live, first of all, and I'm very happy with where I play. Obviously, there's two or three teams down here. We've obviously got our rivals in Plymouth, who are doing very well a bit further down from us, and, you know, Torquay, who are doing pretty well in the National League. So there's three teams here that are really, you know, are really fighting for the bragging rights, I suppose, but we all seem to be doing pretty well in our respective leagues. So, but yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you're down here and there's not too many clubs, and you go to, you know, London and there's loads and loads of clubs, which is good and bad. I think as a young player coming through, it's more difficult down here, because if you get released by the likes of Exeter and Plymouth and Torquay, where do you turn to? And I think if you're in those, as you said, higher populated areas, there's plenty more clubs to be able to filter the players through. So, but I've enjoyed my upbringing and my route through from the Exeter Academy to the first team.
Yeah, and I guess you just get used to using your time with the travel, particularly on away days. You get used to using it constructively, presumably. Try not to get involved in card schools and playing with your phone, and try and read a book or study or whatever you do.
Yeah, it's we spend a lot of time on the bus. I mean, a lot of time on the bus, and we're not in that privileged position where we can fly to different locations and get the book out a wing on the first class train. So we spend a lot of time on the bus, which is good because it brings the group together. But you do find yourself twiddling your thumbs. There is a couple of card schools. We do our fair share of watching of Netflix documentaries, and there's a couple of us that do some studying. We've got a couple of us in the team that are doing Open University courses, so try and do a little bit of that when we can, when it's not on the A roads.
What are you doing, mate? What can you share with us? What are you studying?
Yeah, I'm studying business management, so I'm in my final year of study. So it's been I've been doing it for 6 years as a part-time student. Something I wish I did 2 or 3 years prior to when I started, because I'd be done by now. But something that I've really enjoyed, and something that hopefully will stand me in good stead after I hang up my boots.
Is that your potential future direction? You want to leave football altogether, or do you want to get a sort of admin-related role, which is becoming increasingly prevalent? I noticed James Vaughan's just become the sporting director at Tranmere Rovers. I mean, there's a few ex-pros now staying in the game but not taking the coaching route.
Yeah, I think I'd be one of those, really. I don't have too many aspirations to coach. I think as a player, you do all the travelling around, like you said, you put all the hours in on the training pitch, and then when you come to coaching and management, it's probably that times five. It's even more work, it's even more time preparing and things. And I think to stay in football would be good, but I'm hopefully with my degree, it will leave my options open to kind of go where I want to go. But I think there's certainly roles in football behind the scenes where you don't have to, you know, get your hands too dirty. So it might be something. I just think keeping my options open would be a great thing. And I think if you've got a degree behind you, it can only stand you in good stead.
Have you had the opportunity to move away?
No, in short, right. I haven't.
Okay.
I've not. I really came onto the scene probably 3 years ago, and I've never really, as in, I say, came onto the scene consistently playing, I suppose. And last year was a pretty good year for me, and this year seems to be going okay at the moment. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm obviously open to seeing different parts of the world. Of course I am. But, you know, where I am at the moment, given my role at the club, I love where I am, and I'm fully focused on getting this team promoted, and, you know, who knows where that can take us.
Yeah. There's something to be said for contentment, isn't there? We had Matt Bloomfield, who's just retired, the Wickham Wanderers midfielder, on last week. Brilliant career. But he kind of found a place where he was happy and sort of accepted the role he had. And let's be frank with you, when you play nearly 20 years, that is some mean achievement, just turning up every day, as I tried to compliment him. There is something to be said for finding a role that you're happy with and a fit at a club.
Absolutely. I think that old saying of the grass isn't always greener. I think you see that with a lot of players that leave very good clubs, and you think, you know, why are you leaving there? And I think that's an amazing example. I don't think that will happen too much, but, you know, never say never. And like I have said, I'm very happy here, and, you know, my family's here, and friends are here, and the fans seem to like me at the moment. And, you know, you don't want to go to, sometimes you wouldn't want to go to somewhere else and then not really know you, and it's difficult to kind of win it over. And then you find yourself doing the rounds, I suppose. So it's I think it's rare to find somewhere that you're very happy, and also rare that you find a manager that really likes you as well. So I think that term, the grass isn't always greener, is pretty accurate sometimes.
I was going to start my next question with, this is a strange question, and then I realised I'd already asked you one about a washing machine, which is not necessarily orthodox for a football interview. And the reason it's strange is, obviously, the England captain is a striker. Is that challenging to be in that kind of drop-off striker's role, but to captain a team, being that you haven't got sort of eight of the players ahead of you?
Yeah, it is difficult. It's something, obviously, this is my first season as captain, and it's all new to me. So obviously I've captained a team in the under-23s, the under-18s kind of coming through, as everybody does. But this has been my first proper season doing it, and it's something that I've, first of all, thoroughly enjoyed and feel like I'm getting better every week. But yeah, there is times where you find yourself sort of 60 yards away from players trying to pass on messages, and it's very difficult to do. But there's different styles of leadership, I suppose. And I think one of my main, you know, hopefully my players seem to think the same. I kind of lead by example. I like to think that I'm on the front foot, I'm aggressive, I do things the right way, and sort of people follow that. And I might not be the most shouty and screamy, but I certainly try to lead by example. But yeah, it is a hard role, but I'm lucky that I've got good people around me that don't need too much, you know, helping along. So that's also, you know, testament to them that I don't have to do too much of that.
do you meet all sorts of different personalities as rival captains? Do some really try and sort of get into you and do funny handshakes or grip your hand really tight or try and put you off in the tunnel or little messages? Others are perfectly nice human beings and it's just a good old day.
I would say 90% of them are very good. They know the role and, you know, do you want to be that guy who's shouting and screaming and doing sort of stuff that, you know, why are you doing that? But you do get the odd one that sort of tries to outshout you in the tunnel and things. And I look around and think, what are you doing? You're only embarrassing, you know, bear in mind, there's only us 22 players in the chain, in the tunnel. No one else is going to hear you. So what does it matter? But there is a few, but most are very good. And I think that sort of that captain thing has changed and it's evolved over the years. It's not so much Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira in the tunnel before a game. It's not that type of vibe anymore. Or that might just be the level that we are. But there is a few, but luckily not too many.
Any clues you can give us as to the sort of form you're going to be in over the final third of the season? Because obviously with the roll call of what I read as we were introducing you, none of the rest of us will be able to work this out for ourselves.
Well, I think I'm with you, to be honest. I'd love to say this is where we'll be and this is what's going to happen, but I can't tell you. I'd like to think that we continue in a similar light to where we are at the moment. I think it's very important that we win our home games, like in every league, of course. You've got to win as many games as you can, but we've got a real fortress at St James Park and we find ourselves doing very well there at the moment. And then if we can add some draws away from home, especially in the, you know, the difficult, we've got Bristol Rovers coming up in a week on Saturday, a real tough place to go. I think if you come away from a point with those types of teams, you're very happy. So I'd like to think we'll be there or thereabouts. I think if you'd have said to me at the start of the season we'd be in the playoffs, I would have definitely taken that. Given the climate and given the league, a lot of teams spend a lot of money and invest heavily in the squad, and it's not something that Exeter do as much. So I think that'd be a very good season. So yeah, the short answer is no, I can't give you any clues. I'd love to be able to, and I'd love to say we'd be where we are in 16 games time.
I'll tell you what Exeter City do. They do invest in stability, do they not? I mean, your manager, Matt Taylor, continues to impress more and more. That, you know, this kind of constant out of the frying pan into the fire mentality of a lot of football clubs. Just you guys just seem to improve with little increments across the way and also know what your resources are. There's something to be said for stability in football.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot, you know, a lot of that needs to be from taken from Paul Tisdale, our previous manager, that obviously went through some difficult times at the club with the transfer embargo and not having any money and the kind of having to trust the youth and having to bring the academy graduates through. And that's filtered through to Matt's reign. And it's certainly proven a pretty good production line. You know, so many players that have come through and played for the first team and, you know, all the money that these players get sold on for is reinvested into the club. We're just having a new training ground building and gym sort of area rebuilt. It's due to start in March, I think. And, you know, all of the money that's being made is being back invested into the club, into the city. So I don't think many teams do it, but it certainly works. And I think a lot of more teams now will be looking to do a sort of similar thing to what we do, if that's possible. So it's a good time to be an Exeter City player. And it's really exciting that to know that we're really established in this league and we're eyeing up the next league, I suppose. So that sort of progression from being a stable club to a good club is looking good at the moment.
Matt, sincerely, I've loved the chat. Just a couple of supplementary washing machine related questions. Have you paid for the old one to be taken away, or are you going to have to load that in the car and take it down your local collection point later?
It's a good question. I didn't get an option from my girlfriend, so she just said they're going to take it away. So I think that just gets added to the bill, though. So
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But 20 quid or whatever it is well worth it not to have to start schlepping down the local tip. Or
I did think about that. Yeah, I thought I don't want to put my back out putting the washing machine in the car. How am I going to explain that one to the manager? So it is being taken away.
So I assume as well she's paid for them. Are you going to connect the new pipes yourself, or do you think she's paid for that to be done too? Because I'm just thinking, you haven't got a lot of spare clothes and things. You don't want to get those soaking, do you?
Well, it'll certainly be me. It won't be her, that's for sure. I can have a try. But if they're there, I might just say, do you mind just connecting a few of the pipes, just in case we put it on and there's water all over the floor. So hopefully something's going to be sorted out.
We shall watch with interest whether you manage to do that. And listen, we'll certainly be following all the twists and turns for the rest of the season. Great to talk to you, Matt.
Thank you very much.
Before we go, lots of managerial news in Sky Bet League 2 this week. After just 8 months and a 9th defeat in their 31 league games this season, the latest at the hands of Matt Jay's Exeter City, Bradford City, have parted company with Derek Adams. If they're going to get a new manager, they're not going to find one as successful as myself in this division, he was quoted as saying before his departure was confirmed. Meanwhile, Mike Flynn is backing business at Walsall. He's signed a contract until 2024. He is back in after 4.5 months out of the game since leaving Newport County, where in his 4.5 years, he twice took them to the playoffs. And our thoughts are with the former Walsall manager, Daryl Clark, who's been given bereavement leave by his current club, Port Vale, following the death of a close family member. It's a bit of a baptism of fire for Mike Flynn. Walsall travel to leaders Forest Green, who are now unbeaten in 19 matches. Mind you, Walsall did beat Tranmere under caretaker Neil McDonald last weekend. Tranmere themselves have lost 2 in a row and entertained Port Vale. It's an early kickoff, 2 o'clock, as fourth place Northampton entertain Colchester, Exeter entertain Barrow, Sutton United head to Hartlepool United. Game of the day to me looks like 7th against 6th, Newport County against Mansfield, and managerless as we record this, Bradford City are at Oldham. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Matt Jay, James Coffinger and Ryan Lowe. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.